Morning. Today's daf in Ksuvos is Mem Hey. We're behind. We're on Mem Dalam and Aleph. It is a short daf today, so but we don't have a lot of time, so let's make our way. Thank the Lubin Foundation for sponsorship. Daf is known as Zecher Nishmas Liba Gabriela Bashmuel. We're on the very top of Mem Dalam and Aleph, and finishing up a discussion in the Gemara about a person writing multiple shtaros. The example that we gave yesterday, the reason why we got into this discussion about writing multiple shtaros is because we talked about at what point in time is a man going to subject himself to the responsibility and the liability of a ksuba that he writes for his wife. Does that begin at the time of the Erisin, or does that begin at the time of the Nisuin? Now, as I mentioned yesterday, normally, generally speaking, a man writes a ksuba for his wife only at the point of Nisuin, not the point of Erisin. But it could be that he writes the ksuba already at the point of Erisin, and at what point in time is he mishtabit himself? What time does he create liens on himself and on his properties? So that was machlokas we saw yesterday between Rav Huna and Rav Asi. Rav Huna says that the shibunim for the ikar ksuva, for the main component of the ksuva, like we said time and again throughout the Masechta, a besula gets married, gets a standard ksuva of 200 zuz. A be'ula gets a standard ksuva of 100 zuz. So for that ikar payment of the ksuva, so the shibunim begin already at the point of erisin. Any tosefis, anything that he adds onto the ksuva, only begins at the point of nisuin. That is the opinion of Rav Huna. Rav Asi disagrees. Rav Asi says no. All the shibudim begin at the point of nisuin, even if it was written beforehand. But really, he was only writing to obligate himself at the time of nisuin, but not a later point in time. Not an earlier point in time. Good. That is what we learned. And then the Gemara moved us to a different discussion, and that was, what if he wrote a two ksuvas? One of the value of 200 and one of the value of 300. The 300 ksuva came after the 200. How do we view that? What is going on over there? So what the Gemara essentially said is, he gave it two ksuvas, each one of them having an advantage and disadvantage. The advantage of the ksuva that was 300, well, obviously the advantage is very clear. There's 100 more zuz that's coming in her direction. What's the disadvantage of that? Disadvantage of that is it was written at a later historical point in time. And the problem with that is that the shibudim for that only begins at the time when that one was written. So it could be that it does have a later shibudim. Because it has a later shibud, so she only has a lien on properties that were owned by the husband only going back to the date of the ksuva. So even though the 300 entitles her to more money, but there is less historical lien on that with using that ksuva. On the other hand, if she takes out the ksuva of 200, well, once she takes out the ksuva of 200, which has an earlier lien, so therefore it's less money, but more historical lien on it. So there are advantages and disadvantages to each one of them.
You can assume that he didn't buy more property after the first ksuva.
Even if he did buy more property after the first ksuva, there's no lien attached. The second ksuva, right. The
300.
The 300.
Correct.
In other words, correct. And right, properties that come into his, yes, correct. Agreed. Okay, that was the what we discussed yesterday, and it's just going to take us now for a little bit of a detour, and then we're going to get back to the topic of Motzi Shemra. Well, not get back, but we're going to start the topic of Motzi Shemra. But it took us a little bit of detour of somebody having multiple shtaros for basically the same chov for the same obligation.
And when you say 300 versus 200,
right?
When it's 300, it's supported by the lien, also for 300 value, not 200 value.
It's right. There's a lien against
the make for her to. What's the penalty of accepting the 300?
Because the lien only goes back to the date that it was written, and the 200 has an earlier date.
Okay.
So gives her more history. And now she's able to go back to any property that he owned, going all the way back to the date of the 200, which is an earlier one. So it gives her more ability to collect properties.
Gemara's assuming he didn't buy more properties.
Right. Okay. All that stated, let's go. Mem Dalam and Aleph, Amar Mar. Ibai Bahai Gavya. Okay, so she can collect with either ksuva, as we just got done saying. Lema pliga de Rav Nachman. Now the Gemara points out we're on the very top of Mem Dalam and Aleph for four lines from the top of the Amud. Gemara says, I don't think this agrees with Rav Nachman. Why? Dama Rav Nachman? Because we have Allah sent over the name of Rav Nachman, which is Shnei Shtaros Ayosim Mezacharzeh. Let's say there are two documents, right? In other words, what does that mean, two documents? Let's say two titles over a property. Each title says he sold him this property, right? Shnei Shtaros, Rashi, Shel Sada Acha, Shel Mecha, Matana, Vekasim, Reuven, Leshimon, Echa Benitza, Vecha Besivan. Let's say that the dates of these two titles are separated by 2 months. So Rashi gives an example, but in other words, two titles, and each one says the same exact thing. It's just a question of when it was dated. One was dated the first of Nisan, the other one was dated the first of Sivan. Bitul Shenis Rishon. Now, what happens? The second one is going to be a cancellation of the first one. So, now, we're talking about a sale of a property. What difference does it make? In other words, you own the property, right? So, what's the big deal? The big deal is that sometimes land is sold. This land is sold. Ba'achrayus, it's sold with a guarantee. And that guarantee goes as follows. Listen, I'm selling you the property. Now, true, I do have lien holders, and I do have and I do have creditors, and it's true, they have a lien on this property. So here's my promise to you, it's my guarantee to you. I'm going to sell you this property. If any of my creditors come and take the property, which they're legally allowed to do so, I'm going to reimburse you for this property. Now, granted, by the way, just from a realistic standpoint, I mean, how good is that guarantee? He's got creditors. His creditors already taken his property. And obviously, he has creditors because he couldn't pay back his creditors. So admittedly, now he can't pay back his creditors, and now he owes you a guarantee on the property. Okay, I get it. It's not going to be the strongest guarantee out there, but still, the idea is that he is liable, meaning once he sells the property with a achrayos, with a guarantee, so the idea now is that he's responsible. He has a chov, he has an obligation to you to make up for that property. Being sold the land without an achrayos, without a guarantee, is such risky business. So that means then that if one of the creditors come and takes the land from you, so you have no recourse, you can't go back to him. That's, admittedly, that's hard to even imagine, but... Okay, that's the halacha of selling a property with achrayos. I'm sorry, just give me 1 second. So what the Gemara is saying now is as follows, is that if there were two title documents of the sale, one dated 2 months earlier than the other one, so what was the purpose of the second one? To cancel the first one. What is the point of canceling the first one? The point of canceling the first one now is that, remember, he bought this land with recourse. The land was taken away from him. What does this recourse allow him to do? To go back to the seller and say to the seller, look, one of your creditors came and took the property from me. I'm now coming after you. And that means now that based on the date of when this when the sale took place, anything after that date, if you had any properties after that date, so I'm going to take now my ability of recourse and go and collect one of those properties. But he can only collect properties after the date of the sale. So the second document is really a cancellation of the first document, only entitling the buyer to go back to the second date, not the first date. Okay.
Is it sold to two different people?
No, same person. Same person, same property. It's just that it's two different titles. One is at a later date than the first one. So the second one cancels the first one. And again, the point would be in terms of his ability of recourse if the property is taken away from him.
I would agree to the second one.
It's disadvantage. It absolutely works to its disadvantage. The fact that he has it. In other words, what else is the point of it? Why did he even accept it? Why did he allow it? In other words. It's only there to hurt him, not to help him. Agreed.
Does the creditor have restrictions? Can he just show up and say, I want the property or the money?
As opposed to...
Time limit, like a traditional loan, you have, 10 years back, and if this is the third year, are there any restrictions that the creditors have?
The creditor, if he has a lien on a property, he can come and collect the property in lieu of the defaulted loan.
Who has the purchase document, the buyer or the seller?
Generally speaking, on the sale of a property, so it's the buyer who now is holding the title.
So if he has two documents, the buyer can always show the first one and forget about.
Okay,
the
second. Again,
it's
agreed. Okay, let's go on. I know this is.
I think it's such a question properly.
Yeah.
Even on default, shows up that day. There's no grace period. There's no.
Those are details within the general construct of a loan. For our purposes, let's just deal with the idea that the Gemara is communicating in terms of. multiple titles on the same piece of property between the same buyer and seller. So what's the purpose of a second title? The purpose of a second title is to cancel the lien of the first title. Okay, good. So the Gemara says, Bitrashani is the Rishon. So now the Gemara says, so what do you see from Rav Nachman? That the only purpose of a second title is to cancel the lien of the first title. To which the Gemara says, if that's true, so then Rav Nachman seemingly is not going to be agreeing with what we said earlier about a document of 200 versus a document of 300. She can collect with one, she can collect the other. What's good? Rav Nachman wouldn't agree with any of the above. To which the Gemara says, I don't know. That's not true. Lami Idmar Alam Rapapa Modi Rabbi Rav Nachman the Osi Bay Dikla Tosefis Kasvei. So Hachanami Haosi Alamidi. The Gemara says, no, there's not disagreement. There's agreement. Because consider the following. If the only thing that the second title is doing is just a restatement of the first title, so then you have to ask, why is there a second title? Must be the second title is there to cancel the lien of the first title. However, if the second title is adding anything, the Gemara says, afilu dikla achad, even if it's one palm tree, meaning the point is that the second title is adding to the first title, so then therefore it's written, not because it's canceling the lien of the first, but because of the addition that was written within, but it's not a cancellation of the lien. And the Gemara says, good, now go back to what we saw on yesterday's daf. Now I know 2 days ago. But now go back to what we saw earlier. Meaning she's holding two ksuvos. One being 200, the other one being 300. The 300 is not a cancellation of the 200, obviously, because it's a different amount. So therefore, what's that 300 doing? It's giving her, again, an advantage, a disadvantage. Advantage, it's more money. Disadvantage, it's a later lien. But it's not canceling the first lien. In other words, if she wants, she can exercise now either ksuva. She can exercise the first ksuva of 200. She can exercise the second one of 300. But it's not a cancellation of the first lien. And the Gemara says, Rav Nachman wouldn't disagree with that point. Let's conclude what would seem to be the obvious conclusion. If the two ksuvas were of the same amount, so then enachinami. So then we would all agree then that the second ksuva is there to cancel the lien of the first ksuva. Guf Amar Rav Nachman, the Gemara is going to go back and revisit this point of Rav Nachman. Shtei Shartz, Ayotim Bezeach, Hazeh, Bitol Shenes Rishon, Amar Papa, Modi Rav Nachman, Diyose Beidikla, Latosevas Kasvei. Okay, we restated the statement of Rav Nachman with the additional point of Rav Papa, and to which now the Gemara is going to comment the following. Pshita. Rishon Memecha Vashena Bematana, Liyafas Kochu Dekasov Lei. Gemara says, look, here's what I think is pashut, it's obvious. Let's say the first document is a sale, and the second document, nothing new, meaning no new additional property, same buyer, same seller, but in the second document, he writes it not as a gift, sorry, he writes it not as a sale, but as a gift. So the Gemara says, that second document is not canceling the first document. What's the second document doing? Says the Gemara, liyapos kochu dekasvale mishum dina debar metzra. It's there to only improve the situation of the buyer. How does it improve his situation? Because of the halacha bar metzra. What's the halacha bar metzra? We're familiar, we say this time and again throughout Chas, and that is that when you sell a property, the first person you have to turn to is the neighbor, the contiguous property that's next door to you. And you say to him, look, I'm selling my property. I know it would be an advantage to you to have two contiguous properties. So I'm selling it to you. And you have to make him an offer first. In fact, that's not just a nicety, that's a legality. You have to legally turn to him first and allow him to buy it first. If you don't turn to him first, then you go to an outsider. So he has a tiny, he has a very legitimate claim. You didn't come to me first, you went to an outsider first, and I would have paid that amount. And you didn't lose. This is what's called an halacha zeh zelo chaser. This one's benefiting, and you didn't lose anything. You would have gotten the same sale price. So this is a halacha of bar metzra. So what the advantage is of instead of a sale, making the second title a gift title. So what you're doing now is that basically you're protecting him from the claim of bar metzra. Now, admittedly, this part of the Gemara is a little bit tricky. Because if it really was a sale, so what is that second title actually doing? It's not turning it into a gift. It's just there to afford him the cushion, the protection of if the neighbor comes over and says, hey, wait a second, he didn't offer me a chance. So you take out your second title and you say, hey, you know, not here. He gifted it to me. If he sold it to me, so then you have a good claim. But he gifted it to me. And what are you doing with that first title? You're hiding it? You're not showing it? Admit, and by the way, the questions I'm raising, you could see in the second Tosfos over here where he discusses it. So I'm admitting that it's a little tricky over here to understand how exactly that second title is really affording him the protection against the neighbor. But the Gemara says, in this respect, I get it. The point the Gemara is making is that there the second title is not a cancellation of the first title because it improves his position. Once it improves your position, so then it's not just a repeated document, and therefore it's not a cancellation of the first document.
So the money he gave for the property was a gift also?
No, I understand. I know that's confusing. I know it's like, I'm not clear. I personally am not clear about what exactly is going to happen with that second title. But it's there to protect him.
But isn't it a shiabud? Just like in the ketubah, he's obligated. He's not selling it to her. He's obligated.
Yeah, right.
It's a guarantee against what he owes her.
Right.
So he's not selling it.
No, but...
So why would the neighbor have any claim?
No. Again, this is not a ksuba case. This is...
What I'm saying in this case...
It's a regular sale, and what he's doing is he's writing up a second title, and in the second title, he's just simply saying, it wasn't a sale, it was a gift. And what it accomplishes is that it provides a protection against the claim of a neighbor who's wondering, how come he didn't come to me first? So I'm admitting it's still tricky to get. There's still a first document out there, first title out there. The Kol Shekein Rishon B'Matan V'Sheni B'Mecher Darmin Mishum Dina D'Bal Chov Hu D'Kasav Kain. And the Gemara says, and if the first document was a gift and the second document was a sale, now again, it's still unclear. Meaning the second one is a sale. What does that mean? That means there was an actual transfer of money for the second one. Okay, again, not sure. But the point is that there once again, the repetition of the title is there to improve your position, because Mishum Din Dabal Chovu DeKasav Kain. Because now, once it's no longer a gift, now it's a sale. So that means that it affords you the protection because you actually paid for the land. So Oshneim Bemechu Oshneim Bematana Bitol Shenei Sarishin. However, if the second document is just but a facsimile, I don't mean that like as a like photocopy. But I mean, if it's really the same as the first document, so then the question is, what is it doing? And the answer has to be, it's canceling the shibud of the first document. My time, Rafa Mamar, Amar Uduya Udilei. So now, why? Why is the second document a cancellation of the first document? Okay, simple question, two answers of the Gemara. Answer number one, it's a hodah, it's an admission. What is the admission? And the admission is Rashi Balasharsha Risha Mizuyafaya Vinitsratsa Al Ha'achir Lagabas Mizmansheni. It's an admission that the first document wasn't good. In other words, we're writing a second document, it's a total facsimile of the first document, nothing changed, no new detail, no new method of transfer. It's an admission that the first document is no good. Second explanation of the Gemara, Rav Acha Amar Emar Achuli Achla Lishibude. Another way to understand why the second document cancels the first document, if it's a perfect facsimile, is because it's a mechila. You're forgiving. Meaning, look, truth of the matter is that there's a lien on this property going back to the first document. True. However, I'm going to forgive you. Meaning, if you, for whatever reason, again, from the perspective of the buyer, I don't know why he would be mochel. In other words, it's obviously going to represent for him a potential loss because now he can only go back to the second date, not the original first date, but it's a mechila. That's the Gemara's second way of understanding it. So again, two ways to explain why it is. A second document forgives the... I just gave it away. Why the second document cancels the sheep of the first document? It's either A, an admission that the first document was no good, or B, just a simple mechila, forgiveness of the shibud of the first document. Mai beinayu, ika beinayu. The Gemara points out basic nafkaminas, basic practical differences in terms of how to understand this. Three nafkaminas. Number one, oruya sahade. So the Gemara says, number one, what does it say about the witnesses who signed the first document if in fact it was mezuyah? If it was a forgery, it was a counterfeit. It says about those witnesses on the first document, those are not good people signing on a document like that. And it really calls into question the credibility of the witnesses signing on the first document. If, however, it's just a mechila, so then nothing wrong with the witnesses on the first document. That's nafkamina number one. Number two, l'shalomi peyre. Look, you just enjoyed the fruits of those lands between the first document and the second document. If all the second document is doing is just forgiving the lien on the first document, so that means then that you really owned it since the first document. All the fruit that you ate from it is yours. If, however, we're saying that the first document was a forgery, was a counterfeit, that means that that land wasn't yours from the time of the first document. You only started owning the land from the second document. So that means that all the fruit that you ate in between was not your fruit. You got to pay back. And finally, number three, Tosca. Tosca sounds a lot like the word tax. And you know why? Because that's what it is. It's also who pays the taxes on the property. So again, if we're just forgiving the lien of the first document, that means that that property was yours. You have to pay the property tax. If, however, it's a questioning of the validity of the first document, meaning it was not a good document, so that means the property wasn't yours. Good. You don't pay those property taxes between the first and the second document. Three basic nafkaminas in terms of how to understand why the second document is canceling the lien of the first document. And finally, to wrap up this entire discussion, the Gemara says, "My havi ala diksuva." Remember, we're way off right now. We're off topic. And the reason why we got off topic is because we asked the question of, when a husband writes a ksuva for his wife, at what point in time is he mishtabein? Does he create guarantee, liability for the document? Does it go back to the time of the erisin? Or does it start at the point of nisuin? It was a machlokes between Rav Huna and Rav Asi. The Gemara over here concludes. I'm sorry. My havela diksuva tashma da'am Rav Yehuda mashmo mishum Rav Elazar Rav Shimon manim asayim and ayrusim v'tosefes ben nisuin. So it's a machlokes, and one opinion is that like the opinion of Rav Huna, the base amount goes back to the erisin. The tosefes, the addition, goes to the nisuin. And v'chachamim omrim echazem and nisuin v'echazem and nisuin. The Gemara over here concludes nice and neat that the halacha is that the shibudim, all of his indentured servitude. That's not a good way to say it. That's not clear. But in other words, his responsibility to make good on the ksuva only starts from the point of nisuin and not an earlier point in time. And presumably, even if it was written at an earlier point in time, but the nisuin is when he obligates himself to all the responsibilities and the settlement of the ksuva. So in terms of upon the termination of the marriage, when she goes back now and she's going to take she's going to take properties in lieu of the ksuva payment, so she can only go get properties that were within his possession from the nisuin and not from an earlier point in time.
Which means she can only collect the 300?
In a case where there were two ksuvas that were written, No, that case of 200 and 300, they were just simply written, they were both written after nisuin, but they were just written at different times. Okay. I hear you, but no, I don't think so. Okay. We start now with today's daf. It's not really today's daf, but I'll call today's daf, make myself feel better. We're going to start now with the Gemara's discussion of Motzi Shemra. Okay, just to familiarize ourselves, we have a parsha in the Torah. It's in Parsha's Kisetze, Perek Chavbeis. And we spent a lot of time already in this parak because the halachas of Ones come at the end of the parak. But right now we're going to be talking about the special halacha of Motzi Shemra. Okay, let's go over the special halacha, and we'll start with the Mishnah, and then we'll do the Mishnah. The Torah describes Perek Chavbeis in Parsha's Sefer Dvarim, Parsha's Kisetze, Ki Ikachi Shisha Uvala Usneya. A man marries a woman, and the marriage does not start off well. And I'm being nice in the way I'm describing it. V'samla alilos devarim, and he libels her, he maligns her. V'hotzi ala shemra v'amra se'ishi azos lakachti v'akrav elah v'lo matzasi la besulim. And the charge that he levies against her the day after the first line of marriage is that she wasn't a besula, and I don't know what happened. V'lakach avi anara v'ima v'osias besula anara z'gnei ayir asha'ara. So the Torah then goes on to describe that her father and her mother are going to be defending of the daughter, and they go and they demonstrate that she was in fact a basula. The Amar Avian Aral of the Kenim is Bitin Nasati Lishazeli Shabi Isnaeha. And he goes to the court and he says to the court, "Look, My daughter's being maligned. He doesn't like her. But what he's saying about her is false. And he shows physical evidence that, and I'm not translating the pasuk super literally, but hopefully you understand. And he shows physical evidence that his daughter is in fact a besula. So this man who has now maligned this woman, right, his wife. So the following happens. Number one, he gets malchus, right? That's the pasuk of Yisro So. He gets malchus. That's repercussion number one. Punishment number one. Number two, v'anshi also me'a kesef. And on top of that, he also has to pay a fine. 100 kesef. Now, as I pointed out, this is the highest fine that's given in the Torah. Right? We have denominations of shloshim kesef and chamishim kesef. And for this, for maligning, so 100 kesef. V'nasnu le'avi hana'ara. And he gives it to the father of the Narek, Yotzi Shemra al Besulas Yisrael. Because what did he do? He defamed. Now keep in mind, I'm going to highlight this word because it's going to be the Mishnah's focus. He defamed Motzi Shemra al Besulas Yisrael. Right, someone who comes from Yisrael. The Mishnah is going to focus on that. And the third repercussion is, so again, number one, he's going to get malchus. Number two, he has to pay a fine of 100 shkalim. And number three is that he has to, he may not divorce her for the entirety of his days. As of course we're going to talk about later, if she wants out, so she can get out. But in other words, but he does not have an option to divorce her.
Is this an exception to common law
here? Well, it's interesting. It's interesting. Now, first of all, it's not a death penalty for him.
But it's corporal punishment.
It's corporal punishment. So there is, right, there's malchus and kenas. Right. Okay, that's an excellent observation.
She can always get out, even after she...
Yep. The imam, yeah. We saw that earlier with the onis. Okay, the im emes haya hadavar hazeh lo nimsu b'sulam lana'ara. But then the Torah goes on to describe, but what if he's right? Meaning that was all if he lied. Okay, so we just went over what happens to him if you lie. But what if he's right? Now, by the way, when we say he's right, meaning his claim was that she wasn't a basula. What we have to understand is that what the Torah means over here is that not only was he right, but we also know with witnesses who stepped forward that she committed adultery during the stage of Erusin. As you'll see why I say that in just a moment. So you take her out to the entrance of her father's house and you give her skila. So you do skila and you put her to death. Because she created snus, she behaved in lascivious behavior. Okay, that is the parsha of Motzi Shemra. The one notable thing that we'll point out right now is the following. Generally speaking, when a woman commits adultery, and a man for that matter, but when a woman commits adultery, what's the punishment for adultery? So generally speaking, the punishment for adultery is chenek, strangulation. Four ways that Beis Din employs capital punishment. The Torah, generally speaking, is very clear about which capital punishment goes to which crime. The Gemara Sanhedrin spends a considerable amount of time filling in the gaps where the Torah is not exceedingly clear, but based on drashas, the Gemara Sanhedrin tells us who gets what. But we know the halacha is that a woman who commits adultery is subject to chenek, a quote unquote lower level of capital punishment of execution. Meanwhile, over here, this particular woman is going to get skila. So, in other words, it's adultery. It's the death penalty, but it's a higher level of execution for her because of the special circumstance of what we're going to call Na'ara Hamurasa. Okay? In other words, she was committing adultery while being a Na'ara in the stage of Erusin. Okay. Otherwise, it would have been Chenek. So with all that stated, let's see the Mishnah. The Mishnah starts off with a very detailed halacha. Yeah, again, it works this way almost all the time. In that when we start a discussion of a Gemara, of a topic in Chumash, the Mishnah goes into a detail, meaning doesn't discuss the broader halacha, but just goes right to a specific detail. And that is the following. The Mishnah starts, Wa'an, Mimdalam, and Aleph. The bottom, a Yerushin is Garibita Imam. Let's say you have a woman who converted. And as Rashi points out, even if the conversion of this woman took place when she was really young, let's say even if she was below 3 years of age. So in other words, we know she's a Basula. That's not up. That's not up for discussion. But she converted.
Before age three?
Before the age of three.
With what dad? With what knowledge?
Oh, with a mother. She converted with a mother. Which is, by the way, why the Mishnah probably uses the language of Nizgara Bita Ima, she and mom. Okay, in other words, they without a parent. So we discussed earlier in the Masechta, all the way back on Daf Yud Aleph, that Beis Din will be the Das. But a parent is converting because she's converting with her children. So the child's.
And she remains a Jew even if she denies after age
12. If she's doing it with a parent, I think it continues.
She's a Jew.
I think so. And I'm not sure.
Yeah.
So okay. So let me. I really have to double check. I think in that scenario she doesn't have a choice. The Mishnah over here is going to be focusing on the following. So Vizinsa and she's Mizana. Harezer Bechenek, meaning a special halacha that we just pointed out that in the case of Motzi Shemra. And again, there are two sides to Motzi Shemra. Keep this in mind all the time. There's one side of Motzi Shemra where either he's wrong, and then he's going to have to suffer all the punishments that we described in the Torah, or he's right. And by him being right, meaning she did commit adultery. So there are two sides of Motzi Shemra. Either he's wrong, he's going to be suffering, or he's right, and she is. Now again, as we pointed out, a special halacha for Nara Marasa, which is Skila. The Gemara says, this woman, she was a Nara. But again, she wasn't born a Jew. She converted, even at a really young age, even below the age of three. Nevertheless, she's not afforded, now I know I'm using the word afforded over here very lightly, she's not afforded the special halacha of Nara Marasa. She will be put to death. She committed adultery. She's a Jew. She's subject to all the halachas. But she will be put to death the regular manner in which an adulteress is put to death, and that is through chenek. Harezeh b'chenek. Ein la lo pesach be'sa'av, lo me'asela. In addition to that, there's also not the entrance of the father, meaning that's where she's stoned. She doesn't have the halacha. And not me'asela, and also there's no 100 selah. Now, 100 selah, by the way, remember, you got to keep flipping back and forth. Me'asela is talking about a case where he was wrong. So if he was wrong, so he's not subject to the 100 selah fine that he would normally have had to pay.
Why?
Again, why? It's a technicality. There's no. I know you'd like me to give some sort of rationale, some sort of rhyme and reason why that should be, and you know.
But she converted.
It's a technicality. It's a drasha. The Gemara is going to court a drasha. I understood. In other words, it doesn't. In other words, if you're thinking that this is a halacha to teach us a lesson, it is. But at the same time, like we see all the time throughout the Gemara. You know, there are exceptions, and this is an exception. So, Haisa Harasa Shlo Bekdusha V'Leidas Bekdusha. Now we're gonna keep pushing this out a little bit more. Meaning, we're right now, the first case in the Mishnah was talking about where she converted. Meaning, even below the age of three. Now we're going to move it to a case where she was conceived, not as a Jew, meaning mom converted after conception. But she was born after mom converted. So that means then that she was born a Jew. So Haisa Rasa Shalom Bekdusha V'Leidasa Bekdusha Hareza Beskila. So here, okay, good. So now, as a full-fledged Jew, so what is she entitled to? She's now entitled to Skila. Now, yes, I'm speaking now with a little bit of, I'm not speaking sarcastically, but I understand that's not an entitlement she's looking forward to now as a Jew. But in other words, in this halacha now, she's afforded the special halacha of Nara Marasa, where she's going to be receiving Skila. However, oddly enough, if he's wrong, so he doesn't pay her the 100 selah. So the ribui does include her in terms of the skila, but does not include her in terms of the 100 selah. Obviously, we'll explain that a little bit better. I say a little bit better. It's going to be based on drushas. Haisa rasav leidas bigdusha. Let's say both conception and birth is while after mom converted, so hare he kebas Yisrael chol devareha. What is she? She's a Jew. So yeshla av. I'm sorry, and that would mean sorry. That would mean then she every halacha the Motzi Shemra. If he's right and she was mezana, so skila. and also Beis Aviha, by the entrance of the house of the father. And if he's wrong, so then all the ramifications, Malkus, Mea Kasef, he can't divorce her, etc. Continuing. Let's say she doesn't have a father. Let's say she has a father, but she's homeless. We're still going to go through the procedure of Motzi Shemra. These are brought in the Torah, but as the Mishnah describes, lim mitzvah, meaning it's the best way to do it. Almost like a lechatchila. But in other words, it's not ma'akev. It doesn't hold back the halachas of the basic ramifications of if he's wrong, all the punishments. If he's right, all her punishments. Menahani milam reish lakish. The Gemara starts off now. We're in mem dalam and beis. How do I know this? Meaning, what bothers the Gemara now is as follows: that middle case in the Mishnah where conception took place before she converted, birth took place after she converted. So what do we say? It's a strange halacha. She's going to be subject to skila, but if he was wrong, if he lied, she's not going to be receiving the 100 kesef. Where does that come from? Sam Rishlakish, Amakra, Umesa. What did it say? It said that she will be stoned and she will be put to death. That word is extraneous, explains Rashi. Obviously, anytime anyone getting stoned in the Torah, is obviously the result is going to be death. So that extra word is superfluous, so it's a ribui. What is it coming to include? It's coming to include a case where conception was before conversion, but the birth was after conversion. So the Gemara says, okay, once we're including her for skila, so she's going to be getting the consequences of if he's right, shouldn't she be getting the benefits of if he's wrong? Shouldn't we give him Malkus? Shouldn't we give him shouldn't we fine him Mea Shekel? Amakra Umesa Lemisa Nisrab of Luknas. So the Gemara says, yeah, but think about what the ribui is. The ribui is going on her death. So the ribui is a limited ribui. I know that's an oxymoron. It's a limited ribui. It's only a ribui in terms of her punishment. The Gemara says, why not include the scenario in which she was both conceived and born as a Jew? So the Gemara says, no ribui necessary. Because you know what that is? She's a Jew. I don't even need a ribui. The Gemara says, well, why don't we bring it out to the end and push it all the way out? What if she was? What if both conception and birth was before the conversion? So that means that she was born not a Jew, but let's say she converted, and let's go back to the Rashi and the Mishnah, and let's say she converted at a really young age. Why not include her in this parsha? Imkain b'Yisrael mayahanilei. Gemara says he can't do that because the Torah goes out of its way to say that these halachas only apply to Yisrael. Okay. I'm Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Chanina, Motzi Shemra Ali Yisoma Pater. What if you're Motzi Shemra on a orphan? Meaning she doesn't have a father. So you're going to be exemption. I'm Rabbi Nasun Lavia Nara, Pralazu Shein Lo Av. So again, just a technicality. I mean, just. It is a technicality, but the halachas of Motzi Shemra only applies when she has a father. So Mezer Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Vitim, Rabbi Yosi, Bazvita V'ima, Inyamayin Aviyah L'Rabbos Yisom L'Kanas, Div Rabbi Yosi Aglili. So the Gemara quotes the Braisa. You know, when it comes to Pitui, there's a fine. And did you know that there's going to be a fine? Even if there's no father, there's going to be a fine. So I don't understand, says the Gemara. By seduction, there's going to be a fine if there's no father. And here, just because the Torah says that the recipient of the money is a father, you're telling me that there's only going to be a knas when there's a father? So the Gemara says, most of love, umefarik la. Bevala v'achakach nisyat ma. So the Gemara gives an answer, and he says, well, maybe the case of Pitu is only talking about a case where she was seduced, and afterwards the father died. If afterwards the father dies, so then there's going to be a knas and she'll be recipient of the knas. But what the Gemara is suggesting now, to defend the opinion of Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Chanina, is that both in the case of seduction and the case of Motzi Shemra, if there was no father, so then there's no knas. To which the Gemara says, Rava disagrees. Rava Amar Chayav. Rava says, no, there's going to be a knas with or without a father. With a father, he's going to get the money. Without a father, she'll get the money.
Me, my, me, the ami. This is a case of
Talmud
or no?
No, no, no. Right now, we're back to Jew. So, So the Gemara says that this halacha only applies to Besulas Yisrael, not Besulas Gerim. Gemara says, look, think about it for a moment. Right? We are saying the halacha is that with or without a father, she's going to get a knas. Okay? Again, with a father, there's a knas, father with the recipient. Without a father, she'll be the recipient. But what Rav is arguing is that either way, there's going to be a knas. Again, a knas obviously is talking about a scenario where he was wrong, where he maligned her. So the Gemara says, look, we said we're excluding a ger. Now, by definition, what's a ger? A ger, by definition, in this case, a geris, because we're talking about a woman, by definition, a geris is fatherless. By definition. Meaning we know the halacha is ger shiz gai kekana nola dami. That once you have a convert, so that's like she has no parents, no legal parents. So now, if the halacha were that a fatherless woman would not be receiving kenas, so then I don't need an exclusion of a ger. By definition, she doesn't have a father. The fact that we have to go out of our way to exclude her means that the halacha does not differentiate between whether there is or there isn't a father. So, Ella Iyamar be Yisrael ki agavna patash be Yisrael pata begerim baye. Okay, so machlokis in the Gemara whether or not there's a kenas if she doesn't have a father, and the halacha is that there's going to be a kenas even if she was maligned without a father. But the only difference, of course, is that she'll be the recipient of the kenas.
Same story.
The same. Oh, okay. Right. If it's true, so okay. The Mishnah. No, I'm sorry. It took me a while to think about it. Stoning. Yes. In other words, the Mishnah says even if she doesn't have a father, but that's the father there is lemitzvah, meaning that's just the best way to do it. But okay. I'm Reish Lakish. I'm Motzik Shemra on a Katana Potter. Okay. Motzik Shemra on a Katana. Okay. So again, so she was married off by her father. He maligns her. So, and he was wrong. So, again, technicality, but he's not going to be subject to the additional penalties of Malkus, Kenas. She is a Ketana, and the halacha is only for Nara. Now, V'nisna Lavi, I'm sorry, Shenema V'nasna Lavi, Hanara. Because the Torah says that this halacha is specific to someone who marries a Na'ara. Na'ara Malay Diber Akasov. Now you look at the Chumash and you'll see that Na'ara over here, unlike most of the times in the Torah, when the Torah writes the word Na'ara without a hay, when it comes to the Lacha Motzi Shema, the Torah writes it with a hay. Maskev l'revacha barava time dekasi be'a Na'ara ha'lav ha'chi ha'va min ha'filo ketana. So the Gemara says, now wait a second. You were ready to entertain the other way? Now what's the other way? The other way was that it comes to include a ketana. Can't be. Think about it. Because remember, there are two sides to Motzi Shemra. If he's wrong and if he's right. Now, if he's right, what's the consequence? She's stoned. She's not going to be stoned as a katana. A katana is not going to be put to death. A katana receives no corporal punishment. So the Gemara says, Ha-kasav, imemes ha-yadavar, ha-zeh lo-nimtsu besulun na-ra, vo-tsiyas ha-na-ra, el-pesach be-tsavios, kaluha. Katana la-bas on-chini. Ketana is not subject to malchus. Not subject to punishment. Elakan na'ara. Hakom malchum shenemar na'ara. I feel ketana b'mashma. To which the Gemara says, that's exactly the point. Meaning, you're right. The argument that it has to be a na'ara is an excellent argument. And this now serves as a base model. Anytime you see the word na'ara in the Torah with a hay, that means specifically a na'ara. When you see it without a hay, that could include even a ketana as well. That's exactly the point. Meaning, of course she's not going to be stoned. She's a minor. And therefore, it comes to teach us now how to read Chumash. When you see it with a hay, that means Na'ara. When you see it without a hay, it means Ketana. Okay. Fine. We'll start tomorrow immediately with Tani Shila. We'll go with the Brice of Shila. Motzi Shemra will cover us through the balance of the rest of today's daf, which is really daf mem hey, and tomorrow's daf as well, up to the Mishnah on mem vav amud beis.